Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, you guys, just wanted to let you know this show's funded by our patrons.
It's true. We are not under the umbrella of the man.
Nope, not yet.
We haven't signed our souls, and Brad and I work fairly hard putting out this podcast and making it good. And it would be really nice if you could support. If you enjoyed this podcast or have enjoyed previous podcasts or are planning on enjoying the one coming up, maybe visit our Patreon. Yeah, we have what on there? We got extra content. We got video. We got some writing. We have our Thursday fireside chat only available to the patrons. Brad cracks an IPA and maybe many IPAs and tells old stories about Mick Jones and cool stuff like that. If you have the money and you have the time, please support the program. We would appreciate it.
Patreon.com/goingofftrack. Go check it out.
Thelonious. I've said that word a lot too.
Have you?
I have. I've like many times said something kidding with someone about the Thelonious tones of my voice. But I've never confirmed if Thelonious Monk,
I'm not going to look it up,
made up this word or not.
I'm going to let you have it. I'm not going to embarrass you.
I'm looking it up. Let's see. Thelonious. Uh-oh. The first thing that comes up is Thelonious Monk. Not a real word. It's a given name. Okay. It's an actual name. It's someone's name. Thelonious.
That you're using as an adjective.
Yeah. Wow. That's really interesting. Huh. And he didn't even sing.
And there's your lesson for the day.
He was just a piano player. Yeah. All right. Thelonious, not a word. And if it is, make sure you capitalize it. What's going on, Brad?
Who knows? You could make it a word, though. I mean, isn't that how it works?
You can make whatever the fuck you want a word.
Just as long as enough people pick up on it.
Listen, bro. I haven't lived 40 years in America. If I can't make up my own words, that's freedom. You know?
Yeah.
That's absolutely what it's all about, Brad. And no one can take that away from me. You know? You can pry new words out of my cold, dead hands. Wow, you could really use that for anything and make those people seem stupid.
America. America. Yeah. Those people. Benny.
Oh, jeez. Jeez. Not diplomatic. Not diplomatic at all.
Yeah, fuck those people. That's what I'm saying.
No, stop it. We're supposed to be bringing people together, Brad. When you were like walking through rural Massachusetts in the 70s, where does this come from? Were you getting like pelted with rocks by like trashers riding around in pickup trucks and stuff?
Oh, no. In middle school, those were all my bros, dude.
So you were one.
Yeah, absolutely. My best friend lived in a trailer.
Okay. What's his vibe?
He joined the army and I don't know. Maybe he's listening. What's up, Kay?
Yeah, what up, Kay? Thanks for tuning in.
But I got to the point when I was like in 10th grade and I didn't want to go to college. I didn't think I wanted to go to college, but I realized that I was not going to have the option. And I kind of like turned it around, kind of dropped my old friends.
Now, that's kind of interesting, though, since your dad is a biblical archaeologist.
Oh, there's three or four. There may be four doctor's degrees in my house. There's at least three. Yeah.
Okay. So you did have another path available to you in the home.
Well, I mean, I had guidance, that's for sure.
Yeah. I had a very similar experience with going to college. Like, towards the end of high school, I was like, nah, like, it's just not for me. I'm playing music. I'm doing shows. Like, that's my vibe, you know? And I had already moved out of my mom's, like, before I graduated when I was 17. And I was working a couple jobs, but one of the ones I was working was at a place called the Super Saver Liquor Locker, which is one of those big, like, liquor warehouse type places. It was on Route 22 in Somerville, right behind this big apartment complex that had a lot of local drunkies. And it was a ripper of a place. I worked there for a long time. Like, the job wasn't that bad, but I had some pretty awful managers. I don't know if you can imagine what a mid-level liquor store manager is like at those times, but they're not happy with their lives usually. And the, you know, 17, 18 year old, like, ragamuffins they have working in the back, giving them shit, usually doesn't go so well. And I'm looking down one night, I'm on literally, I had just stacked maybe I'm like 7 or 8 feet in the air stacked on can cases. And I'm sitting up there. I kind of just finished and I'm like, all right, I'm gonna chill out for a sec. And I look down at this guy. I never forget, his name is Steve. And I just saw him all angry and old and like not doing what he wanted. And I had this like revelation. I was like, oh no, like if I don't go to school, I'm going to be Steve. I'm like, this isn't good. I'm either going to be Steve or I'm going to be like ponytail man who works at the deli who still plays in bands when he's like 45 and he's still giving you flyers. I'm like, so one way or the other, I don't like the way this is panning out. And that's when I literally signed up for like financial aid and started going to community college. I found out it didn't work for me, but I'll never forget Steve at the Super Saver Liquor Locker teaching me this life lesson by default, you know?
Put you on the path. I mean, I might have not gone except, you know, I was in a small town and I didn't know how to get out except that I knew that like all my idols had gone to, or most of them had gone to art school, you know? Like, I think Joe Strummer and like, like a lot of musicians had kind of met in art school, at least according to what I was reading and whatever
in the Bauhaus Monthly or whatever.
I was trying to think of like what a good 70s 80s, you were reading 80s rag. I was reading in Cream magazine.
Well, man, all of this leads to Josh Gondelman coming off as a highly educated fellow, you know? He talks and I'm just like, I want to listen to you. You seem smart and fuck, I was like 10 minutes into the research for this interview and I'm like, you know what? I can't wait to talk to this guy.
Yeah.
I'm like, absolutely. He seems so bright and so vibrant and, you know, and I know I've made the mistake a couple times already on the podcast and I haven't even told you about this where I finish an interview and I kind of think I made a new friend. You know, because it feels like such a good conversation. Like, you know, like intimate and like we're talking about like your family and stuff like that. I'm like, all right, we're friends now. And then I'll like write a follow up email and I'm like, oh, we're not friends. I'm like, I forget. But Josh, another one, I walked away from this. I'm like, hey, you want to go to a basketball game with me? Like, I want to be your friend. You seem so nice. You know, I need nice friends like him.
He said it sounds like fun. I think you may be going to a game with him.
Yeah, but he's so nice. He would never just be like,
oh, that's right.
He would never go like, listen, man, you're overstepping your bounds.
You crossed the line.
Yeah, like that's not happening. So we'll see. Josh, if you're listening, the offer is on the table to come to a Nets game with me, but feel no pressure. I know you have very famous friends. You probably go sit courtside with Desus and Mero. You don't need my seats, but the invitation is open, Josh.
Yeah, I didn't really think about that fact that he is just too nice to say no.
Probably. Oh, yeah. He would never tell me in my face. Well, Josh, you hit me up, okay? Just let me know. I won't be offended either way. Okay. Should we get into it?
Let's listen.
I got to be honest, doing research on you, I felt an automatic kinship to you.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
Because I've always been known as a really nice, friendly Jewish guy.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you.
Same.
Yeah. And I was like, and even doing, there is one thing in doing research for you that really struck a chord with me that I was like, wow, this dude might be a lot like me. And it was when you were talking about growing up with encyclopedias.
Oh yeah.
Where just like you had to have the set. But the thing I hadn't thought about was the fact that like, oh right, this is like the books that like seven old white men 200 years ago wanted everyone to know.
For sure. And this was like, I had a set when I was in like elementary school.
Right.
What we had in my home was like a set from like the 50s or 60s. And I grew up in like this is the 90s when I would have been like a kid, but doing research projects with these encyclopedias. So I'd be like, Dad, what's this about a Soviet Union? Like, no. Just like that kind of stuff. Yeah. Like it says man not has there. not yet landed upon the moon. It's like, well, that's a different argument now.
Like, Dad, I need to know about the song Wind of Change. Come on, it's not in here, man.
According to the encyclopedia, that song doesn't exist. The band doesn't exist.
Right.
Scorpions?
It was the Scorpions, yeah. Mm-hmm. I had a Trivial Pursuit set when I was a kid that was very similar. It was not only from like the 1950s, it was some Canadian version.
Oh,
so
that's so tough.
We literally had to set a new set of rules that if it was like a pre-1980s Canadian question, like discarded.
Yeah, like this man hosted the CBC's 10th rated news broadcast from 1970 to 1974. And it's like, no,
we can't.
I shan't.
This is not nice.
I'm forbidden from playing Trivial Pursuit. My wife forbid me.
Why? Do you get too mad?
Because there was a few family games like with one of our parents. I can't remember which that like I completely lost my shit because I was like, that's not the right answer. It was something, I think it was like a technical thing. Like you would love this too. It was probably some like technical, like scientific, right. I don't know. But I was like, I was absolutely confident it was the wrong answer. On the
I know for certain it's 2.4 megahertz.
Yeah.
I know it. That's so funny.
I'm not allowed to play.
Wow,
not
Brad, I'm going to use that against you. The fact that you think you know more than the encyclopedia. Anytime I argue with you.
We've been rewatching Seinfeld the last few months, like ooh, from the beginning.
Wow.
We're in season 9 now, but that the Moops Trivial Pursuit, it says the Moops. It's like such a, it's like, yeah, I can like at my worst when I'm like not feeling confident or happy, when I watch George Costanza, I'm like, yeah, that's what a person should do. And then when I'm in like a good headspace, I'm like, that's the worst. Those are the worst impulses a human being could have. Yeah.
Is that the magic of Seinfeld? Cause that's actually something I wanted to ask you about was that I love Seinfeld. I think it's wildly entertaining and funny, but I've never really been able to understand what was the universal principle of Seinfeld that brought people in who aren't from New York or aren't Jewish.
Aren't Jewish, right? My friend Allison Leiby, who's a really, really funny comedian and writer, we've been talking because I've been rewatching the whole thing and she's a huge Seinfeld fan, and about how even though Jerry is the only like canonically Jewish main character, like
right,
the Costanzas are Jewish. Like Elaine is like
right,
kind of tracks as Jewish. But so like, it feels so Jewish, but they're like, oh no, George is Italian. But it's like, no, he's Larry David.
Yeah, he's that's true. So what do you think it is? What's like the, you know, as someone who writes comedy, what's the meat inside of there that's actually like drawing your, you know, person from the middle of Kansas who maybe's never met a Jew? Like what's actually bringing them in?
I think it's how picky they get with stuff, like how close they zoom in, because they're not like, oh, you know, Jewish references. Like, you know, like I've done enough synagogue gigs in my time, not to brag about doing stand up in synagogues, but I've done enough that like there's some like you can kind of ease your way into it with some like general, like not even jokes, just like like winking references to stuff. And I think Seinfeld doesn't do that. Right. They just zoom way in and they're like, you know, when someone talks too quiet and you hate it, you know what I mean? And they just like, even stuff that like has never happened ever, they treat it like it's this phenomenon that is like, could happen to anyone at any time. Like you could meet someone at any time who just like is naked all the time. And like when opening jars and sanding the floor, and it's like, that's nobody, but there's like a kernel of that where you're like, yeah, it is weird. Like I did have that one roommate who would like, they would vacuum naked and like, what the hell?
Right. Well, okay.
And that's the thing when you are a New Yorker, like it doesn't take you long to realize that they didn't have to write anything. You know, like they literally didn't have to write, like you wouldn't have to make up anything. Like all of that stuff has happened to me and crazier.
Yes. You know? It's so wacky. And then just like tightening it up and like, you know, polishing it and showcasing it in a TV friendly way. But yeah, I agree. There's like the most New York thing about it to me isn't like the any specific neighborhood or any specific like the subway stuff. It's the idea of like, you just want to like meet up with your friends and see a movie, or you just want to go to the diner and everyone you meet on your way there is annoying
or insane. Yeah.
Yeah. You're just like, how is this? What does this person do? Do you ever have this feeling where you meet a person and they're just so unreasonable that you're like, what are you like the rest of the time? How do you subsist in this world? Right. Like not, and I don't mean that in like, in terms of like, a person who is living with mental illness, right? Like, I don't mean like, oh, a homeless person. I mean, like, you meet a guy and you're like, hey, can I walk around you to get to this bag of chips? And he's like, I'm looking at those chips. And you're like, you took it to 15 out of 10 over me saying, please, can I get past you to look at these chips?
Right.
You're like, what do you, like, who... sometime today you're gonna punch someone.
This is clearly not about the chips, friend. Can we talk?
This isn't about me. This isn't about this interaction. And this is not, I'm not the only person you're gonna yell at today.
Well, that's the thing in New York, like when you're around there, and I don't think I truly notice until I like go on tour or do something that, you know, takes me away from the tri-state area long enough to know that the chip thing, that's like an accumulation of weeks and weeks and weeks of muckiness just to do the simplest task. Like you own a dog in New York, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, isn't every time you leave the house to walk your dog, it's just, it's an adventure. You never know.
Yes.
You never know what's going to happen, right?
Right. Some weird person is going to be weird at you or like there's going to be some like thing on the ground. You're going to be like, oh, why is there like a cat skeleton on the sidewalk?
Don't eat that.
Just like, just don't, come on. You're not, the bones will get stuck. Don't do it.
Yeah.
I know this is your natural enemy, but it's, that's like, I truly feel like the, and my life is so generally like pleasant and gentle. Like my experience of New York City at this point in my life is like, my wife and I have like an apartment where we have this little office space. So we're not, you know, when we're both working from home, we're not on top of one another. We live close to the subway. It's like we're not struggling financially at this moment. So like all this stuff is like, I'm so lucky to have that. But all that said, there's just like the idea of like, okay, I need to like get a new chair. And it's a place that's like 10 blocks away and I don't have a car. And so like everything becomes like this intricate problem solving of like, do I take a Lyft there and then have them wait while I get the chair and then take it back? Or do I like call the Lyft when I get the chair? Like everything is just like, so everything is so complicated.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you always had that, like that part? I mean, it always seems to me you're obviously very thoughtful, an empathetic guy, at least on the surface, unless you murder people on the side, seems possible. But it seems like comedy always takes like kind of like a keen observational eye like that. And do you remember even as like a kid when you were younger, being sort of an interested observer in like the human condition like that?
Yeah, I think as a kid, I mean, I think that maybe gives me a little too much credit as I think when I was a child, I wouldn't be like, when I was 10, I started observing the human condition young, but I was definitely like, I would notice little like hypocrisies or little inconsistencies and like kind of seize on those kind of things. Like I remember even as a kid, which was a Seinfeld bit at probably around the same time, but like I think I noticed it separately, the idea of like when you would start going into a movie theater or whatever and they would have a medium and a large soda and no small, and I would just be like, it's a small and a large. It's you, right. There's no medium because medium is the middle ground between things, and it's like that kind of stuff I've like noticed. And I think like a lot of the comedy that, you know, my stand-up and even like to an extent my podcast, it's like comes from a place of feeling like overwhelmed. Like I'm not usually on stage like mad at stuff. I'm just like overwhelmed by it or like befuddled by it, or you know, that's like kind of where I come from. I'm not, it's not a lot of like, and let me tell you about this idiot.
Right. So it's more like working through it as you go.
Yeah, it's just like, oh man, like I just like, why is everything such an ordeal? I think is like, or like, hey, this thing happened, and like that's a lot of like, I really like this, you know, this is like very exciting and novel to me, just kind of like pointing out like, oh, this is why this thing that we treat as normal is actually like very overwhelming to me.
Sure.
In a good way or a stressful way.
Right. Well, that takes a little bit of like a concept of just like injustice, right? To just know that something's bothering you, like it's just fundamentally wrong. Or were your parents like that? Like did you get any influence from them in that way?
I think so. It's interesting because I think my dad is like that, but like when I was a kid, I think my parents are very like sweet and good people, but my dad does get like riled up over, and not, he's not like an angry dude, but he, these little injustices, I think he'll like go to the war. Like the big one when I was a kid, this is like a great example. He would sign up, the Boston Globe would have like a special where you could get like 6 weeks for $1 a week of newspaper deliveries. And he would sign up, and then at the end of 6 weeks they would bump the price up, and he was like, they should tell me, you know, they should tell me that I should re-up or discontinue my subscription after my 6 weeks ends. So they kept bumping up that, like he would call and cancel, and then they would offer him the discount rate again, and then they would bump up the price. And so finally he was just like, no more, like I'm the Boston Globe, it will no longer be delivered here, because their pricing structure works is like a pain in my butt. And so it's like that kind of thing. But also he's like really active in his trade union. He's a member, he was a glazer. So he did like windows and storefronts and stuff.
Yeah.
And so he was really active in the union. So I think there's a lot of like, I think that was like a place where his sense of justice was like applied. And he would like tell me about that kind of stuff, like going to the meetings and like speaking up for like, well, we're part of this bigger umbrella organization and we want our benefits up on par with the other people's benefits, because, you know, we work as hard as them and we pay the same dues. And so that kind of stuff is like from a legitimate, like, yes, we have to, like, people should be treated fairly. But then there were also the little things about, like, the newspaper and whatnot.
Right. Well, that's fucked up. Even you're telling me this story, and I still, it's fucked up when they do that to people. I don't like some Columbia House bullshit, you know?
It just happened to me today where I was subscribed, and I debated. I was like, do I do it? Do I unsubscribe? Because I know they're running the deal again.
Yeah.
Is I subscribed to The Athletic for their basketball coverage.
Yeah, I haven't jumped over that paywall yet. Yeah.
So they had a deal. It was $1 a month for 6 months.
Okay.
And I was like, I saw yesterday maybe that they were doing the deal again. And I was like, well, my 6 months can't possibly be up. And then today, like one day later, I got the charge to your credit card $7.99, and I was like, and I was like, do I, and like I entered into this contract of my own volition. Right.
Yeah,
this is on me for sure.
Right.
But now I'm like, okay, do I pay the $7.99 or do I cancel and then try to resubscribe for the $1 rate and be like, no, I'm a new subscriber because I canceled.
Right. Like, they gotta know.
And then, they have my information on file. Yeah. This is not going to be a secret to them. Yeah. So it's all about just like, how, like, am I willing to endure the ordeal of being like, no, you said there's a deal.
Yeah. Now, this is, we got to keep Brad out of this question because this just occurred in my mind. But do you ever like get to a situation like that and be like, you know what? I can't be the Jewish guy who goes to the nines on this one.
Oh, yeah.
Because it just feels too weird.
No doubt. I am so, I will not, the lengths I'll go to like avoid sending food back because I'm,
right.
I'm
right.
like, yeah, I'm a little picky. Like I have a couple picky food things where like I'll order a sandwich with no tomatoes. And then if the tomatoes come, I pull the tomatoes off.
Yeah. Same.
It's just like, that seems like,
yeah.
Yeah. Who wants that drama? Who wants to be that guy that's like, actually, can you make it again? And it's like 50-50. They're just going to scrape the tomatoes off.
Yeah.
And then bring it back. And then they're also going to not like me.
Yeah. There's so like, no way to get out of that feeling cool at all.
Right.
Right.
So I'm going to short circuit that complaint and then just scrape them off myself and enjoy the sandwich. What? 99% as much. I'm not allergic. It's fine. I'm just like, I am so concerned with not looking like the guy that's like, the soup is too cold.
Yeah.
Now it's too hot.
Right.
Yeah. I like him so. Yeah. I hate to think of myself as being that person.
It's a weird overcompensation. I have to deal. I actually hadn't really considered it much. And something happened just recently where I went to go hike with my family. Mm-hmm. And it was a Saturday and we were about to go on the trail and the trail was closed for deer hunting because it's like, you know, the deer hunting season. Mm-hmm. And my first instinct, it's like fucking Saturday, you know, like I'm out here with my family, like this is kind of fucking stupid. Go shoot your deer on Tuesday or something.
Right.
So I find one email on the list who's like the stewardship council guy,
sure,
you know, and I start my email. I'm like, hey, listen, like I just hit this trail with my family. You know, this is kind of weird with timing. It's the weekend. Like, this doesn't seem necessary. And I'm about to sign it, Ben Horowitz. And I'm like, nope. I'm like, I'm just putting Ben. And I censored my last name because I'm like, I don't know who I'm writing.
Right.
Like, and I don't know if this person
this
gets
Jew doesn't
this
hunt.
Fucking annoying Jew out on the trail. Always finds something to complain about. And I was like, nope. And I censored my name because of it.
Yep.
Yeah.
I know that feeling. I know that feeling well. And I'm not like a super complainy person, but
neither.
It is like something has to rise. Like something has to rise to the level of like, not only is it inconvenient for me, but like there's something else at stake. Like I like never write bad reviews of stuff.
No,
like, you know, I'll never like, I could be in a ride share and they could like go up on two wheels and it's like, this guy's just trying to make a living. And so never. The one time though was, this is like another Seinfeld, like I have a hack life, but I was, I landed in, I think Austin for a gig. And I went to the rental car place and they were like, oh, yeah, it's going to be an hour. And I looked back at my reservation because I was like, oh, maybe I anticipated it would take me longer to get there. And I like actually, you know, had reserved it a half hour early. And I was like, what do you mean it's going to be another hour? And they're like, well, more people wanted cars than we said. And I was like, or than we thought. And I was like, yeah, but I reserve. What does reserve mean? If not, there's one waiting for me. And so, and they were like, sorry, can't help you. So I sat down and I was just like messing around on my phone. And as I sat down, I got the email that was like, how was your experience at the rental car desk today? Assuming, you know, because the email was just time released, assuming that I'd left already. And I was like, let me tell you a couple things. But I like,
since you asked.
I wasn't gonna Yelp you, but you came to my inbox. So let's tango. And but obviously like wouldn't throw the person at the desk under the bus.
Right.
But I was just like, yeah, it was very unsatisfying. Like I reserved a car and there was not a car ready and I have places I have to be. That's why I reserved a rental car.
Yeah, yeah. That's a weird one. Hey, Brad, you just don't get this at all, do you? You just get to float around this world. No problems.
As a cranky complainer.
Cranky, complaining white guy. Just so nice.
I scrape off the tomatoes too. I don't like tomatoes.
Yeah, the tomato scrapers.
But I, you know, I've been in the service industry and certainly been around too many people that were, you know, I'm not going to send it back and be cranky.
No, but for real, I think it's like that. That's the thing. I don't want to complain if it's going to like come down on somebody else. Like, if it's going to be more inconvenient than just like, oh, hey, could you check again? Like, I really like, you know, it's like going into a store and be like, hey, would you mind checking in the back for these pants? They don't have any of my size out here. Like, are you sure? Like, it would, you know, it would really, I like just need these new pants for something. Like that kind of stuff. But like, right, if it's something that like, I suspect someone else would get like yelled at if they get caught redoing it, or like something that's going to come out of their paycheck, it's like, it has to rise to like such a level of like, hey, there's like a hypodermic needle in this, in this smoothie. Right, yeah. Would you mind just like redoing that?
That's awesome, man. I was wondering, I mean, we talked before we started recording how I hadn't realized when you were, you know, off track post pandemic, Jesus and Mero got back going within 2 weeks, which is super impressive. And something I thought you might be able to speak on, I thought was interesting, is how much truth do you think is in the concept that like people need entertainment, like sports and shows like this, which sometimes in the context of sports, put people in physical harm to provide that escape.
Yeah.
Like, do you think this is a real necessity of humans, or is this just like of its own economic construct that like it's just about jobs?
I think that it's like the way people say it is mostly about making money, right? Like, people saying like, well, the NBA being like, we have to have this all-star game, and like, right, LeBron James, one of the three greatest players in league history, yeah, who seems like incredibly aware of his place in history, and like, sure, so all-star appearances like probably means something to him, right? Is like, there shouldn't be this game. I don't want to play in it. Mm-hmm. Played 13 minutes and then sat the rest of the game. Like, right, and that's his decision as an employee, you know, as a worker to do that, I think, sure, is like and to say that. So I do think like a lot of the time when people say like, we need entertainment or whatever, or like we need something under these conditions, I do think that there is truth to that, but also all previous entertainment to this point, which is so much, is like at our fingertips. Yeah. So that's the thing. Right. When someone's like, we have to get we have to make new episodes of Young Sheldon, no matter the cost, the people demand Sheldon. It's like, I don't know. We've got so many seasons of Big Bang Theory. They could just rewatch on whatever streaming platform.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
just
true.
We'll revisit Sheldon a year older. How about that?
Right. Right. I mean, did you find that, was there any feedback for you all when you came back where people were like, oh, goodness, thank goodness you're back on. It makes me feel so much better.
People have been so nice about having the show on, and I feel less guilty about doing the show because, you know, Desus and Mero host the show separately from their two,
right,
it was from their individual homes. Like, they didn't, you know, occasionally someone would like come in and set up some equipment, but usually the equipment gets like sent to their house.
Yeah.
They set it up themselves over a conference call with our director. And it's cool. Like, so there was such minimal risk, it felt like. And we've been like branching out a little bit, doing a little bit more in person once like tests became more available, right, and like a more firm protocol fell into place. But like, at first I was so stressed out the first few months of the pandemic, but I didn't feel like it was irresponsible to do the show because like for the first months we did like literally everything from their two separate houses, or if we, all the guests were on Zoom, and people did seem really grateful. Huh. And so I don't want to discount like, And I don't want to discount how like the cabin fever that I felt early either, or sure, like when basketball came back, I was like, oh, this makes every night of my life better.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is also like, if it didn't, if they were like, we can't do this safely, or if the players were like, this is unsafe and we can't work under these conditions, I would like 1,000,000% stand with that.
I mean, was it easier in the context for you since Jesus and Mero are like, just pros, like those two have been doing things with each other and back and forth, yeah, with each other for so long that, I mean, I can imagine there's like a harmony and sort of a poetry to the way they work at this point. Do you think that was helpful in it?
Yeah. Their chemistry with each other is like so incredibly good.
It's infectious.
It's infectious. It's fun. And I think the other thing, it's not just like how good their chemistry is, but just the simple fact that there are two of them, and because they improvise a lot, you know, so much of the show is just them riffing.
Right.
They surprise each other and laugh at each other, which is such a like a lovely element to the show, where you know, other hosts, like people writing for other shows and other hosts delivering monologue material just to camera, don't have the benefit in their own homes of like someone else laughing at them on camera, like, you know, the way that you would have an audience laughter. They're like cracking each other up, I think, is such a joyful thing to witness during this time. And I think it like greenlights you laughing at home a little bit more too.
Sure. What was the first time you met the Bodega Boys?
I didn't meet them. Like, we knew of each other through Twitter and stuff, but the first time I met them was when I interviewed for the job, and it was November 2018, and it was the day after the Red Sox had clinched the World Series against the Dodgers. And I'm a big Red Sox fan, and they're big Yankees fans.
Sure.
And so I walked into the interview, and Desus looks at me. I wasn't even wearing a hat. Desus looks at me and goes, I bet you're pretty fucking happy today. That was the first thing he said to me. And I go, yeah, man, it's great to win the World Series. You guys should give it a shot.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm sure he appreciated
He did, I think. And it was like I was off and running. It was like a very good interview. And I think like that I feel really good when someone gives me shit in that way.
Yeah.
Like it feels like someone thinks that it's like an in-group thing. Like,
it is.
They say like you only tease the ones you love or whatever, which I don't think is true, but you can tell the difference.
Yeah. No, you got the proper like New York City initiation right there. Cause it's about how you take that.
Yes.
You know, that's what it's all about. You gotta come in sometimes hot.
Yep.
When you're dealing with a new person, to see if they can handle it, to see if they can break balls and have some fun.
And not, again, and that's the perfect level, right? It's not like abusive. It wasn't cruel. Right. It wasn't like out of bounds. It was like exactly the level that like when someone gives you shit, you should be able to take it in stride, especially as a comedy person. And I think like that exchange was very fun and like, you know, and like the vibes are really good in the room because of that. Like when I did Conan in 2016, I don't know, like I truly don't want to give this away. I don't think this is a bit he does with every person, but he came into the green room and he was so sweet that he came down. He came down and he was like, hey, Josh, thank you so much for doing the show. So nice. I was like so starstruck. I was like, this guy wrote the monorail episode of The Simpsons. And he comes in. He's like, thank you so much for doing the show. This is, I don't know if you noticed this, this is the biggest green room of all of them. And I wanted you to have it today because I always wanted you to remember that your first time doing the show, we tried to book a band and they weren't available. And it was so funny. And I was just like, so like, I was like, oh, he's not like, is this guy going to do well? He's like, let's bring him in, you know, let's bring Josh into the feeling of the show.
Yeah.
And it made me so happy. And I go, can I have the, can I eat the veggie platter? And he's like, no, I'd prefer you didn't. And we do the taping and it goes well. And he's so nice afterwards. He comes over, we shake hands in the on set. And he says, you know, some people, this made me like just everything he said. I was like, this is perfect. It was like such an exciting taping. Like it was so much fun. And he shakes my hand. And he goes, you know, it seemed like you're really having fun, and some people who come on for the first time, you could see that they're a little scared. There's a little fear in their eyes. And he's like, and I've learned long ago, it is none of their business. And he points like out to the audience and goes, none of their business. What's going on in here? It was so funny. Oh, and he goes, man, come sit down on the couch. So I sit down on the couch and he says, thank you. It was, Melinda Rauch from Big Bang Theory. Tony Hale was the other guest. He was like, and Josh Gondelman, good night. And we wave from the couch. And then he leans over to me and he goes, you know, we can't use any of this, right? And I go, oh yeah, I wouldn't. And he goes, we're just going to run an old episode of Get Smart. And I go, well, can I have those carrot sticks now? And he goes, no, those are for Flea.
Wow, he really went in on you. This is
crazy. And I'm like, you can see, I think there's like 1 second of it in over the credits as they're rolling where he fake yells at me and I fake am aghast. And my manager was in the wings and she after was like, is everything okay? She was like, your face was like shocked. And I was like, oh yeah, it was just like, we were just goofing around. And she was like, good, 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 good. Because like, you really sold it. And like, I love that kind of stuff. Like that kind, yeah. I'm like very comfortable being like comedy bullied, or like talking like fake trash to someone who I yeah. know will like receive it well and lovingly. I think generally I tend towards like too earnest and just like appreciative of people, but I love being in a place where it's like, I know if I say something just like a little mean to this person, they will take it as like, I love this. And yeah. like, I feel seen and I feel included.
Right. Right. I was just telling Brad the last episode that I think because of where I'm from, text messaging has become a problem with me because mm-hmm. I have that thing with people. I like to, you know, get into it right away, kind of show yeah, yeah, where yeah. you're from. But in a real life context, you know, it's followed with like, I'm just fucking with you.
Yeah,
like
a yeah, yeah.
tap on the shoulder or something like that. And I realize now I don't tap on the shoulder in text. And no one knows. They just think it's just like a fucking dick. Yeah.
It just sounds like, all right, you dumb son of a bitch.
Yeah, right, yeah. Wow, that was harsh.
Well, man. you work with Chris Farron and Jeff Rosenstock, right, in Anarcto Vespucci, which I love. Band I love. And when I saw Chris open for Jeff's live album recording, right. He gave like truly the funniest best intro I've ever seen. It was like so perfect.
Yeah,
where he said essentially, he was like, you know, thanks. He was like, thanks everybody for having me. I'm gonna bring out Jeff in a second. I just want to say, sometimes you have a friend in your life that teaches you to be your best self and make the art that you think is good and that you know is good rather than what you think people want and what will sell. Because really what's valuable is speaking from the heart and making the work from your soul. And for your headliner, I am that friend. It's like, truly, I will never forget how funny that was. It's like such a great bit. And like, I love that kind of thing where it's like yeah. so clearly like, everyone in the audience is in on, you know, this big crowd at Bowery Ballroom
right.
or wherever it was. And like, it's not cruel, right? It's no. not like it's everybody understands that it's between friends, and the opening act, like kind of doing that to the headlining act is like a very funny direction to take that. Whereas like, even if the headliner does that to the opener, there's like a little bit of like,
feels
oh,
a little,
come on.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Like be nice to this person. They're still struggling. But like when the opener does it to the yeah. headliner, it's so funny.
Jeff knows how to get his pants taken down for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta be honest, when I'm on a Nynarctico tour, especially the one time, and often when Laura Stevenson comes out to do keys, the three of them together, it's like the biggest relief to just get in the van every day. You literally just sit back, grab a shitty coffee from somewhere and just watch mm-hmm. it like play out. And it is the funniest shit.
I love that.
Yeah.
And three of my favorite artists and previous guests of the show all, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Friends of the program,
multiple,
I'd even
multiple
call
guests.
Friends of the program.
Friends of the program.
I didn't want to overstate.
Yeah, yeah. So we talked about Conan a little bit, and,
yeah.
you know, he's obviously now known for what he is, but came up as a comic writer. And I always see these like top three, top five best stand-ups of all time. It's always the same people on there. Now, to you, who is the best comic writer of all time?
Oh, gosh, that's such a good question.
Or is there like Mount Rushmore?
I mean, like there's so many people that whose work I'm just like, man, like, just like, Conan is for sure up there, having written for like SNL, The Simpsons, for his own show for so many years. Right. I'm trying to think of people whose work I really love. I mean, like the team that works with, that has worked with Mike Schur over the years on like yeah. The Good Place and Parks and Rec, sure. I have so much admiration for. gosh, I'm trying to think. There are these two books, I forget, by Michael Sacks, that are interviews with comedy writers. Mm. And I just like devoured them both. One's called Poking a Dead Frog. And then if people are listening and interested, they're easy to find. Mike Sacks, S-A-C-H-S. And those books are just like full of people that I'm like, oh my gosh, this like so many brilliant insights. Mm. Yeah. So I like hate to, my problem is if I start naming names, I'm just going to go for like 3 minutes. Like it's the end of like an early 90s rap song. And it's just like, shout out to Joe Mandy.
Got to do it like all-star selections. You know, the people who get left off. Mm-hmm. Maybe next year, you know, you can't feel
bad. Yeah, maybe next year. Yeah. Sorry, Bradley Beal. You're scoring 30 on a team that's won 8 games. Yeah.
No starting.
You know what I always wondered about that, about writing is, you know, like in music, you'll have people that are really renowned as like a guitar player, but you know, they can't outside of their band, they're not nearly the same. You know, it kind of takes the band. I'm just wondering, has there ever been a writer who was just like the absolute best writer for a show or for a particular person that just couldn't cut it outside, or it just wasn't as funny?
Interesting. I would say, I mean, just the way my disposition is, I would say, I would flip it and say like, there are writers who like thrive more under certain circumstances.
Right.
Not that they're not funny under other circumstances. Like usually you have to like get the, you know, you have to like show something to get the job or whatever. But like there are people that like, you're just like, wow, their work when they wrote for SNL was incredible. And then the stuff they did after, like whatever the circumstances, didn't quite get to that level or whatever.
Yeah, I guess that's the same.
I think it is the same thing, but I'm like such a, like a reluctant to like speak, even sound like I'm like maybe speaking ill, that I'm just like, oh yeah, it's just like, decent circumstances are bad and then better set up to thrive. You know who else is like, Julio Torres is someone whose stuff is like amazing. Like the stuff he did for SNL was so great. And then Los Espookies is so great. And his hour special, My Favorite Shapes, is amazing. And I just like, I'm so impressed by someone like Julio who has such a strong aesthetic and such a strong set of, values and interests as a writer and performer, and can like bring that to so many different venues. I think that's really cool. Cause I feel like, I feel so impressed by that, because I think something that I do is like, I'm pretty malleable. So like there's stuff that you like, you know, in various places you'd be like, oh, Josh probably pitched that. But it is, I do feel like the thing I do better than like bring myself everywhere I go is like try to serve the project, sometimes to the like tamping down of like what I think is, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like what I would want to be doing. And I think like someone like Julio is like incredibly gifted at writing SNL sketches that also are so distinctive as like Julio Torres sketches.
Right.
I was wondering that. Now, after all these years of comedy writing, you know, when you're sitting down to do something, you know, for another show or for yourself, do you think after all this time, it comes from a place of what you think is funny, or from what you know from experience other people will think is funny?
I try only to pitch stuff that I think is funny, especially if it's like a bigger piece that we're going to produce. So like there's that intersection of like, this is what I think the funniest thing in the world is. Right. And then this is what I think will work. And then like, if people aren't buying what's over here, you kind of like, all right, well, I'll extend an olive branch,
right?
Which is something that I heard Mike Birbiglia talking about with just like stand up years ago.
Okay.
Was saying that like what you want to do is like write it the way you think it should go, and then if it's not hitting, then you figure out like, okay, what do I need to do to communicate the thing that I think is funny and true to other people in a way that they're ready to understand it.
Yeah, I wish musicians got that chance. Like you could just go on stage and play a song. Then you kind of like stop in the middle. Your guy, guys, this one's not working. let's bring it back to the space. Let's bring it back. We'll work it. We'll show you guys next.
I guess
when we come back tomorrow night for the next like 2 weeks in a row, we'll try it again. You know,
right. With like the new like key change happens here instead, and like we're gonna tinker with the lyrics. Yeah, that's so funny. But I'm so jealous of musicians because it's like, okay, there's the five of us in the studio and we wrote this song and we played it and we send it out into the world and then people like learn it the way it is. People love it the way it is.
It's like a team. Yeah, you're like, you're just like a coach.
Yes. And with stand-up, I feel like I go out on stage and I'm like, oh, how about this?
Oh, yeah, no.
Like, I've been doing it long enough that it's not, like, nerve-wracking, but it's definitely like, I'm putting it out there.
Yeah.
Nope, not this time. Got it. So that still happens.
That's funny. All right, last question about writing. Now, I read somewhere that you have a deep love for the film Roadhouse.
Yeah.
So here's what happens. Tomorrow, you're just working, and you get a call from director Rowdy Harrington.
Mm-hmm.
He calls you. He says, Josh, I love your writing. I love your sensibility. Here's the keys to the sequel, Roadhouse 2. Now, how do we honor Dalton? And we put Roadhouse 2 together. And what's the pitch?
I feel like the easy one. Okay. So this is maybe not easy, but this is the pitch for sure. This is, and I've seen it done a couple of times with reboots recently.
Okay.
And I think it is like an effective move, which is they did it in the Bill and Ted, the new Bill and Ted movie and in the new Coming to America, which is like, okay, Dalton's daughter is now the like bar,
the
either
cooler.
She's the bouncer or she's the bar. Yeah. Or the cooler. Right.
Yeah.
Or she's the bar owner that needs to find a cooler that has the qualities of her father, something like that. So like you make it a little less like dudes broing out than the original one was.
Sure.
And then you try to bring like a generational connection to it. That's my like immediate idea.
We still casting Sam Elliott.
As long as Sam Elliott's alive, we're casting Sam Elliott.
I feel like
Ben Gazzara. Ben Gazzara has been vanquished, though, right? Feel like we need a new villain. We need a new villain.
Maybe his kid.
Maybe his kid.
Now, if you had a list, like if you had to cast, let's just say for the sake of being a group of men in a group chat here, if you had to cast Dalton now. Like, who is the new Patrick Swayze?
I would go Statham.
Can he dance?
I don't know. That's a good question. I would go Statham, though, because I think he is like great at the action stuff. Like, he's kind of one of the last actors who will just do like straight up genre action movies.
Yeah.
As like most of his career, diet of those.
He won't
was so good in Spy. Doing like kind of not taking himself too seriously. So I think like kind of a campy roadhousey movie, you go like that character of like the gruff man, you go Statham. That's my call.
I like that.
Off the dome. Yeah.
Are we making it? Are we going to taking someone's throat out towards the end?
He's got to as an homage. Cause I feel like fans of the original will lose their minds.
Yeah.
Right, because Dalton does it like two or three times, doesn't he? That's like his move.
I mean, well, it's the great irony of that movie, which is he spends the first like 45 minutes of it telling everyone to relax, be cool, be nice, and then just murders everyone. You know,
that's the heart of my book that came out in 2019 is the idea of like how. I think about that speech all the time. And like we were talking about before with like complaining about stuff or sending food back, it's like, be nice until it's time to not be nice. Right. And then they go, well, how do we know when it's time not be nice? And he goes, I'll tell you. And it's like, I wish someone would be like, hey, Josh, time to not be nice. Yeah, and I'd be like, okay. But like, I'm just like, you know, I will just like let any behavior slide. And then I have to be like, oh, I should stand up for something.
You need a little Dalton on your shoulders.
I need a little Dalton. That's what it is, a Dalton and a Costanza.
Dalton, you need a Dalton app.
I think this is...
Dalton app.
Yeah, we got... All right, so we have mini Daltons, mini Costanzas on each shoulder. And you're pretty much covered for life, right?
That's who does it, yeah.
But you're not supposed to listen to Costanza.
Well, that's
ever.
the devil. You can't have two Daltons on your shoulder. Yeah. Yeah. There's no tension.
Imagine those two going at it. Costanza and Dalton. They could CGI and sim so many things these days. Can't
they
someone do that?
They would hate
for
each
me?
Other. I feel like I've become such a cynical audience for like Super Bowl commercials. Because it's like
they've gone down.
I think I agree. I think they've gotten less fun, and I think they've gotten more openly cynical. Like obviously advertising is advertising, but I feel like the level of pandering that happens now is like so visible. Whereas like when I was just a kid then, but like the Budweiser commercials with like the "What's up, guys?" It's like that's annoying, but it's its own thing.
Yeah.
And then now I just feel like everything's like a reference to six other things. Anyway, not the point. But yeah. the commercial during the Super Bowl this year,
right,
with the Jason Alexander hoodie, really did get me, because I was like, this is so weird. Like whoever wrote this is like a legitimately funny writer.
Yeah. That's awesome. Now I know Brad's gonna flip out if we start talking about sports, but I saw you had Zach Lowe and Mina Kimes on your podcast. I know you're a fan.
Yes.
And so one sports question I'm going to ask is, based on my loose math, you must have been a freshman or a sophomore in college when the Red Sox broke the drought.
Yep.
Can you tell me what you were doing and how you got into it?
Yes, it was terrific. So in 2003, I was a freshman in college when when Grady Little left Pedro Martinez right in too long, and there's the Aaron Boone home run.
Remember it well.
Yes. And so that my friend Matt, who is from Newton, Mass, who's a great dude, he was so steamed, and like we were just like around people from other places, including a bunch of like kind of casual Yankees fans who were like, right. Yeah, we won the series. And I had to like take him for a walk. That was, I had to be like, hey man, it's all right. There's always next year. And we like took the walk. And then 2004 was great. I just was like so excited, was on campus at Brandeis, so like close to the city. Did my roommate freshman year was a childhood friend, and he, I believe, went into the city for the parade, but okay. I didn't end up going. But yeah, it was so exciting. It was I remember saying to my dad, I was like, I really think grandpa can die happy at this point.
Nice.
And my dad was like, don't say that. Like, meaning like, I think you might like be too right.
Like your famous last words.
I think he might think that, and we don't want him to get any ideas.
like they want him out.
No. Oh. Just like, okay. Don't say that around him before he's like, yeah, that was the last thing on the bucket list.
Okay. Sorry. It went dark.
No. That's okay. I mean, I took it dark to start with, but yeah. And then in 2007, when they won again, I was just out of school and watched like with the same group of people pretty much. And we were like roommates in Allston, Mass the year after college. But I will say in 04, coming back from down 0-3 in that Yankees series in the ALCS, that was like the World Series wasn't as competitive, right? It was like a sweep, I think, or maybe five.
Yeah.
And that coming back in that 7-game series against the Yankees, it felt like they could not possibly lose the World Series at that point.
Even Yankees fans knew it by game five, something funny was going on.
It was inconceivable to me that like after that series ended that they would then lose to the Cardinals and we would be like, again?
Yeah.
This again?
Yeah, there's no chance. No chance at that point. It was fate. It was crazy. Sorry, but Brad. It was great.
Yeah. Sorry, Brad.
So Brad came up
with... Well, this is a good segue for our game.
Please. Sure
is. Is that what you were going to say?
Yeah, perfect. I set you
Since
up,
Since you
Brad.
Have that...
Silver platter, big guy.
Since Make My Day, your podcast... is if anybody hasn't listened to it, you should. It's really fun.
Yeah, it is. Oh, thank you.
Where you ask people questions to basically cheer you up. I don't know if these might cheer us up, but everybody always talks about the LA New York City comparison, but we want to go Brooklyn, Boston.
Okay, let's do it.
So we got a couple of questions here. Food.
Food.
What's your like most like favorite like Brooklyn? oriented food, and what would you like, and what's Boston?
So the thing, I've been really nostalgic for Boston food lately. I haven't been home since Christmas 2019. And so the thing that I miss so much from Boston, and I've been thinking about it like nonstop for the past 2 weeks, as it seems like we're getting closer to me being able to go visit my parents, is there are these, like every town has its own, or more than one, like famous roast beef, like sub shop basically, that specializes in like thin cut roast beef sandwiches. Mm. And a lot of them are roast beef and seafood, which is a baffling combination. Wow. That I didn't realize was not normal until like literally 2 years ago. Like when I went home, yeah, that Christmas, I was like walking with my wife had come to visit my family. My wife Maris and I were walking to a Dunkin' Donuts for my parents' house. And I said, I was like, oh, Liberty Bell, we've never gone there when you've come to see my parents. It's like one of those roast beef and seafood places. She was like, what is that? Yeah. That's not anything. That's not and the
I
famous
even, I
one.
I didn't even know about that. Either.
The famous one is Kelly's Roast Beef.
Yeah.
That is like, there's one on Revere Beach. There's one in Saugus. There's like a few, there's one in Logan Airport now that does a roast beef breakfast sandwich that almost killed me. but those, so they have like roast beef and like clam strips and then lobster rolls when they're in season. And that's, I miss that specific thing so much.
We talking like fried clams or like
fried clams. Yeah. 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 Okay. Not like steamed. I think it's like not quite a high enough quality to do like a steamer, but, that kind of stuff. And the one that is like famous, I've been doing a lot of roast beef research lately, is the you order a roast beef three-way, which is cheese, mayo, barbecue sauce. Oh, and that is like a very, and it's on like a toasted onion roll usually. Sounds and it's good. Like a very, yeah, it's so good. There's like, obviously there's roast beef sandwiches everywhere, but like the roast beef culture is like such a, and it's not even all of Massachusetts. It's like right. North Shore, Boston is
I wasn't aware of these.
Are you digging into roast beef just for kicks, or you got something going on roast beef related?
I've been missing that. Like I've been missing home and just like thinking about that. And then the more I've been thinking about it, the more I've been researching it. And there's this, I don't want to say the name because it's a private group, but there's like several thousand people in this private Facebook group that's all just, reviews of individual roast beef sandwiches people have eaten.
Wow. Roast beef culture.
Roast beef culture. And they're like, the reviews are all like incredibly aggressive. Yeah. So they're all like, it'll all be like, flavor of the beef, 5 stars, go fuck yourself, guy. It's like 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
You shit in your mother's mouth if you think different. And it's so ridiculous. I love it so much and I miss it. So when next time I go home, I think I'm going on like a roast beef sandwich tour of the North Shore. And I'm going to go with my parents. And then I'm going to take my sister to the place near on Revere Beach near where my grandparents who have both passed away used to live. And then I'm going to go up to like further north. And my friend has a baby or a 1 year old now that I've never met, and like try to see him and his wife and their two kids. And so I'm going to go on like the like roast beef, the post pandemic, like roast beef and family tour. That's and I like awesome. It's like the thing I am truly the most excited about in the world, maybe.
Have you gotten wind of like a convention or anything yet? Like once a year in New Bedford at like the Holiday Inn, they like meet in the basement or something.
The beef off?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's gotta be something.
I'd for sure go to that. Like I would like cancel. I would like call in sick from work.
I hope
like,
you'd cover
the beef contest.
You'd have to cover it.
I'm gonna write about this trip and then hopefully I discover some interesting things. But like I'm just like really excited to do that. And like I miss like just the preponderance of like fried seafood or like just any seafood as like a summer food. I've occasionally we'll do like a Brooklyn lobster roll, but they're always from like, or almost always from places that are like, sure, we also have a lobster roll and it's like too expensive. And
not a lobster you want to go by like place.
Yeah. You want to get it out of like a trailer or a shack. And they like, it's like, you're like, I can't believe this is $23. And then there's like a whole lobster. And then you see another lobster crying and they're like, my family, it's all in that roll. and so that's like what you want from it. Yeah,
right.
Let me think about like Brooklyn food. that I love, because I'm like a real eater. The thing I feel like a hack, just like the thing I get the most when we go out is like a, or not even when I go out, but like the thing when the world is open that I do the most is just like a bodega tuna fish sandwich, which I'll have like 2 to 3 nights a week.
Bold.
Just coming home from stand-up shows. But like my favorite place, I'm trying to think of like favorite places. You know what? As an adult, I've gotten into like a little fancier cocktail now and again. And I think like the culture of that, that's like not fussy and pretentious, like we're a mixology bar, everybody has a bow tie that's a mustache or whatever. It's just like a place that's like, we also do great cocktails. And I think our neighborhood is really good for that. There's a couple bars that have done really great takeaway cocktails through the pandemic. And so my wife and I have allowed ourselves to be like, well, look, it's a walk to the place. So that's like going outside. It's like half a mile each way. And then we come back.
Now we can get drunk on the way back. Yeah.
Yeah. We're supporting local businesses. Sure. Like this is, you know what? We're being good community members.
It's one pro pandemic thing is how any little neighborhood or town anywhere in America that had more than like 4 bars in a couple blocks has turned into fucking New Orleans.
Yeah. Yes, you know, for sure.
Everyone's drinking out of bags, drunk on the curb. Like
it's such an annoying, like prudish thing that like you can't have a drink outside.
Yeah,
I think
it's crazy.
Like it seems like it's just like the existence of those laws is to like crack down on unhoused people. And like, obviously if someone is being like belligerently drunk at a SantaCon or whatever, like that's a problem. But like adults having a cocktail on a stoop is like delightful.
Yeah. Right. I remember every time I'm in Europe and I'm just like walking around a street having a beer, like it's an anomaly.
Yeah.
I'm like, this shouldn't be an anomaly. This is painfully normal and nice.
It's so pleasant. Yeah. It's so pleasant. And like the idea of, having to just like stay, especially because the options are like, you're sometimes like, oh, this bar is so crowded. I wish we could just like go to a park and have a glass of wine or something or a beer if you want to have a drink in the evening. Obviously, no pressure on people that don't want to drink, but if you want to, you should be able to do it outside.
Yeah, it's civilized.
Civilized.
Here's another question. Brooklyn and Boston, mm-hmm. fashion. What should you wear in Brooklyn to appear native?
Oh,
what
gosh.
What should you wear in Boston to appear, to blend in?
Interesting. So when I was living in Boston, for most of the time after school, I was in Allston, which is like very, like a lot of BU students, a lot of BC. Mm-hmm. It's like between BU and BC was where I lived.
That's where all the basement shows are, right? In Boston?
Yeah. And a lot of great venues there. Yeah. Great Scott, which I think is closed.
Which I just closed,
Great Scott. I know.
Yeah.
It was such a bummer. I have, it used to be right behind me, but I moved it. A poster, I did a Thanksgiving show there 1 year when I came back. I had my birthday there and had a show there a couple times. Yeah. And then kind of just east, which I don't know if it's Allston or like it's just like West Boston or whatever, like that's not the name of the neighborhood, but like if it's technically Allston, but like the Paradise is another great venue that I've seen great shows at and performed at once or twice. So I live there, and I feel like there are like more neighborhoods in Boston that feel like you can get away with dressing like a little sweatpantsier because they're, you know, it's like, oh, this is like every hungover college student is dressed like that.
Right.
And there are so many neighborhoods where that are just like swamped by that, for better or worse. And I think in Brooklyn, I don't know. I think, this last year has been a real sweatpants year, and I've really backslid, but I think it used to be, like this. I felt like there was a long run of a reign of skinny jeans, which I liked. I'm a pro skinny jeans person.
Yeah.
But now I'm seeing more of those like cool people, maybe not in my neighborhood, but in like cool neighborhoods where like hipper artists, like in a Bushwick, like those like baggy, not JNCO baggy, but like baggier clothes are coming back into fashion. It feels like.
Yeah, I think I started seeing some bell bottoms kicking around, stuff like that's going.
Yeah. And just like cropped, like wide leg cropped pants. And I'm like, wow, this is, because to me, that is like truly a return to my middle school and high school years.
Yeah. Right.
Where the pants were just, I describe them in my book, I describe them as like two denim sleeping bags side by side.
Exactly what it was. Yeah.
Yeah, the no feet tribe.
The no feet, right. And then the back of them just all like shredded to shit.
Right.
Yeah.
And I never thought, for someone with like an unusual body shape such as myself, I always thought I was like, oh, good, baggy clothes. Like I'm nice and safe. No one can see anything. Cool. But then I put on some slimmer stuff getting older. I'm like, fuck, that actually makes you look a little slimmer. You know, all this baggy stuff makes you look a little bigger.
I think you can. I'm like trying to learn that as I grow older of like, oh, just get clothes that fit and you look good in them. Right. Instead of like trying to like trick people into being like putting yourself at, like just wearing a Deal or No Deal briefcase as clothes and people be like, ooh, what's in there? Oh. It's just like dress for the body you have and it looks good because it looks good.
Right. That's a good point.
That's awesome.
All right. Last question. Mm-hmm. Fun. Somebody who's never been there before, say out of town cousin or somebody comes to visit you in Brooklyn or Boston.
Ooh.
Where do you take them?
Yeah. Your Jewish cop brother-in-law's come. Who I read about. We got to talk about that anomaly too.
Yeah. It's fascinating. My wife's brothers, who are both police officers. I honestly don't know what they do for fun. I think I would take them to,
I mean, it's like asking, like, what does a unicorn do for entertainment?
Right.
Because
they
don't exist in the wild until I read about this.
But in Brooklyn, I think in my neighborhood, I think it's like a fun excuse to do the stuff, like when someone visits, to do the stuff that you wouldn't do week to week.
Right.
Exactly. Sure.
So like in my neighborhood, or not in my neighborhood, but like walkable about a mile in a couple directions, you can go to like a bar that has bocce, like a union hall.
Right.
And so that's what I would do. I think I would go, oh, you want to have like a fun night out on the town? In like my quadrant of Brooklyn, we'll go to Union Hall, we'll play bocce, we'll like go see an independent comedy show or band play downstairs. And that's like a night.
That's good Brooklyn.
I think that's what I would do. And in Boston, I'm trying to think. I would recommend, so, and in New York, like there's, you know, the New York stuff is like easier because it's more famous too, right? Where you can be like, oh, do you want to go to the Guggenheim, you know, from television and film and history? And in Boston, there are also great like museums and things like that.
The aquarium. I love that aquarium.
Oh, the aquarium's great. Yeah. Yes. Which is like the Guggenheim of fish.
It is actually. That's what made me think of it.
That I knew it. Because it's like a corkscrew that you walk up and it's just like one big tank. Yeah. The aquarium rules. My favorite is the Isabel Stewart Gardner Museum.
Okay.
Which is, it was like this one super wealthy lady's house and her private art collection. And when she died, she was like, all the art stays the way it is, but it can be a museum, but you can't move anything. And then in 1991, I want to say, a bunch of art got stolen. It's the largest unsolved art heist. Wow. In history. Yeah. There's a great podcast about it called Last Seen, S-E-E-N. It's awesome. It's like my favorite crime story. And so there's like hundreds of millions, maybe tens of millions, certainly, of art stolen, never recovered. And you can see where it used to be because they can't put anything else where it was. Mm. So there's like empty canvas, like empty frames where canvases were just cut out of the frames.
Crazy.
Yeah. And it's like a cool, weird mansion.
Yeah, it's like the Joker went through there or something.
It is. Yeah, it's like the Joker was there. Maybe it was the Joker. They should interrogate him.
That's awesome.
But that is like, that's for sure. It's like a very specific Boston thing where it's you're not going to quite see that anywhere else. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a to-do.
Did you see the Casey Affleck Dunkin' Donuts bit?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That's too fucking funny.
Like, I know, it's so good. I like wish it weren't him, because like he's such like a fraught figure. I wish it were Ben, honestly.
Is Casey fraught? Did he do bad things?
Yeah, I think there were some like some accusations of him being abusive.
I like that one.
I,
God damn it!
I know
he was.
I know, it's
a
bummer. I'm pro Ben. He's my favorite Affleck.
He does very little wrong these days. You know,
like I know.
He has a couple reindeer games in his past that I think put him in a strange box. But mm-hmm. He's got a heck of a body of work at this point, right?
He really does, and he's got two Oscars, which is wild. But the other Ben Affleck thing, first of all, this is terrific in Gone Girl.
Yeah.
I think he was so good in Gone Girl that you go, I don't know that he's acting, which I think is the best acting.
Sure.
Where you're just like, I think that's just like what he does.
Yeah, right. He was.
There's the story that has been told about him on the set where he's in either LaGuardia Airport or JFK in a scene, and he's all the TVs are playing his story and his face is on all the TVs, and he's trying to flee because everyone thinks he killed his wife. And he buys a hat at the airport and wears it low down over his eyes so people don't recognize him. And David Fincher was like, it's a, you've got to buy this Yankees hat at the kiosk. That's the scene. And you put it on. And he's like, I'm not wearing a Yankees hat.
Wow, really?
And they shut down. This is like widely retold. I hope I'm not like being, but he was like, I will not wear this Yankees hat. And it stopped production on the movie for 4 days while they found a suitable hat, which ended up being a Mets hat, which is literally the next thing you'd think of. So, but it was because he was like in this standoff with David Fincher, and Fincher in the, he tells it on the Gone Girl, like director's commentary. He's like, kind of this kind of unprofessional prick. And it's like, well, after one day of a standoff, you're also at fault.
Right.
Like, you don't have to write around, like, you don't have to do rewrites in the script if it's a Mets hat versus a Yankees hat.
Yeah, you could easily sell the Mets. I mean, you could be like, hey, I'm a random Phillies fan for no reason.
It could be like FDNY, right? He loves the fire department.
So true.
And it could be any hat you could find at LaGuardia Airport or JFK Airport, whatever. And so I have a real like hometown, like, we talked before about how I hate inconveniencing people, and I hate like the idea of like shutting down production for 4 days because of a hat preference. But there is a level at which I'm like, I have to admire that he was willing to go to this length for that specific cause.
Yeah, I even respect it. Even as a Yankees fan, I respect that. Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you, man.
Yes, I would want, if Desus and Mero were cast in a movie and they were like, oh, yeah, you're at the New England Aquarium.
I don't want to see that.
You don't want to get sunburned. You put on Red Sox hats. It's like, I would want them to be like, absolutely, we won't.
I don't even want to see that. I'm like scared.
Oh, it'd be weird. Ooh. You'd be like, someone kidnapped Desus and Mero. Yeah. These are deep fakes.
Like, are they okay?
See, yeah, I didn't understand it until you put it in that context. Now I get it.
Yeah. It would be aquarium. But we did for the show season one, we did like kind of quick deep fake things, because that technology is like kind of emerging. And we did Desus and Mero deep fakes, and I voiced the Mero one. Oh. And I was like, go Red Sox. I think it made it to the show with Mero being like, God damn it, Josh. Like, could tell it was my voice immediately.
What's your Mero sound like? How did you do it?
I did not do an impression.
Okay.
I was just like, hello, it's I, the kid Mero.
Right. Okay. Murky water to do to your bosses. Right?
Yeah.
So I know, even if you're not an optimistic character at home, you know, I can't say what you are there, but you give off a very optimistic point of view. You know, you coach people on Twitter and do all these things to try to bring a little light into the world. Like, functionally, what are the types of things that you tell yourself in order to stay optimistic? Is optimism simply like a discipline where you need to continue to tell yourself the same things? What are your tricks to just kind of keep that focus?
Oh, that's a great question. I think like stuff that is really helpful and restorative to me. Cause I'm not like, you know, sometimes I'll get asked to do stuff that's like a little more sincere and a little less comedy. And I'm like, well, you have to realize I don't know anything. I'm like just a dummy, with like a lucky brain. And, but I do think like, I'm not like immune to feeling bad or feeling discouraged. And the things that like really are restorative to me is like connecting with people that I, connecting with people that I love and care about, and like, you know, talking to them, doing things in person with them when that's possible. That's really helpful to me. Doing stuff that's like within my control is like a big career thing for me. Like instead of waiting around like, oh, I hope this thing sells, or like, I hope that I get hired for this job, being like, I'm going to make something that I like.
Right.
And then do, you know, do what I can with it instead of focusing on like the industry show business career outcomes.
Creation.
Focusing on the creation is like super helpful to me. It's just like, make the thing that I want to make,
right,
and then find a way to show it off, like whatever that is. And that is like super helpful to me. And then like, I mean, this will sound pandery, like on the show, but like going to see live music is like such a thing for me. And so, because it is like the time I can most reliably turn my brain off. Cause it's such like going to a show is so visceral. And so like your body is involved, whereas like, and it's so outside of anything that I do or am good at. So like when I'm at a movie, sometimes it is great and I can get immersed, but I'm also like
cutting it up.
Oh, this like kind of has some third act problem. Yeah, like I get like, I like it's find it harder to turn off work brain. But like if I'm at a show, I'm just like, this is fucking awesome.
Right. You can get swept up in it more.
Yeah. And just like have that, it like fully immerse myself in the joy, even under like weird circumstances. Right. Like a couple of years ago, I saw Wu-Tang at Terminal 5.
Okay.
And we were, it was smashed full. Like it was the most full I've ever seen a show there. And we had to watch, like to have any kind of vantage point where you could see and stand, we were on the lowest level back in the hallway behind the back bar, looking through, like you can, they have hanging glassware, looking under the hanging glassware.
I know that
all
spot.
The way through. Yeah. Yeah. It's the spot. Only place we could stand. And I was like, this still rules. Like Wu-Tang rules. This is awesome. I love this. So that, and that kind of stuff, like that kind of thing. Or like even, you know, I think more reliably even than like, I'm a big basketball fan and that kind of stuff, but like doing stuff as a fan enjoying things is so helpful. And like, that's such like facile advice, especially if people are listening to this and are like, I have like depression, and it's like, oh yeah. I'm not like a mental health professional. I just mean like when you're like, yeah. But like when you're, I feel like if you're grumpy or feel like stuck or, have kind of just like a situational thing, I think like being a fan of something and enjoying stuff is so, and being around people are like the big things. And again, such like simple, dumb advice, but I really like it. It is stuff that I forget to do,
right?
Where I'll be like, oh, I haven't like done something for fun in 3 weeks.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like it's just been like, I've worked and then I've come home and I've gone to sleep, or, you know, I've worked and then I've done like, I had this thing to do as a favor for a friend, this, you know, that I had to like go do something like quasi professional, right, or like, but going to like support my friends and go to see bands that I love, or like, it's so that specifically seeing live music is like, I'm out of my own head a little bit. I'm just like enjoying an art form that I have no aptitude for, or like I have never attempted to like do at a professional level. And it's just like such a, the experience, it's like a physical experience. Yeah.
So what have you been doing like this year when those things have been taken away from you? Has it sort of turned a little more, you know, philosophical as a result?
It's been tough. I mean, like fortunately I'm here at home with my wife, and so I've done a lot of like cooking and like a little baking and that kind of stuff. That's like, I'm doing something physical. I'm staying off the internet because my hands are busy. I'm listening to a podcast.
Right.
And then we're like enjoying a meal together that like I made. That's like that kind of stuff. It's just like the real simplicity of it, and is so grounding to be like, oh, thank goodness I'm here home with like my favorite person. And we get to, we're like taking this like horrible global time. And the like soothing part of it is that we get to be together and like together in for an expansive time that we've like never spent this much time together before.
Right.
I don't think any two people do.
Yeah.
Just like a year in three rooms total. Yeah. And you can't go anywhere.
Yeah. Brad's in three rooms with two extra ones, right?
Yeah. I got two kids in a,
oh my gosh,
in a 1,000 square foot apartment.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
What's your trick, Brad, for being an optimist?
It's alcohol.
And we've also, the other thing is like having make like stuff like this, like doing a, even doing my podcast, doing friends podcast, it has been so psychologically beneficial because it is like, you know, it's like a professional thing, obviously. And like the people who, like, I work really hard on my show, you work really hard to make your show, but it's also, there's like a level at which it is social and like I'm having a conversation that's outside of like, I fucking wish I could visit my parents or what, you know what I mean? Right. And just like, I mean, we talked about it a little bit, but in a way that's not just like me being like, this sucks. Like I would just text a friend and be like, I'm cranky. This sucks.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome.
So I do, I like that stuff has made me feel really connected, like getting to like, just goof around and like and talk a little trash with friends for like an hour or two is so enormously uplifting to my mood.
That's awesome.
It's a fun show. I think it's a perfect pandemic show to listen to.
Oh, thank you.
I had so much fun listening to this. Can we have like a Zach Lowe appreciation 60 seconds? Because I just want to hang out with that guy. Am I the only one? He seems
Zach rules. Yeah.
He's like, he seems
big Zach Lowe fan.
I'm like, usually I have an issue being such a big sports fan sometimes, which is, I usually am not hearing anybody like me talk. You know, yep. They're either from the just super nerdy camp or super jockey camp, you know, and I kind of have a hard time relating. And Zach, I'm listening to, I'm like, oh, this is like a guy to actually hang out with. He seems reasonable. You know, I assume you're a Celtics fan.
I am a big Celtics fan, which I think he has said that he grew up as a Celtics fan.
Yeah.
So he has some like Celtics sympathies.
Sure.
And yeah, I mean, I think that there's like a whole new wave of people who are like covering sports in a real sincere and thoughtful way. That are enjoying sports and also thinking about them in like a thoughtful way and also not just doing the like hot take old guy of like, he's not trying hard enough, ship his bum ass out of town, kind of stuff.
He's not.
And I think that's wonderful. And like so many like women who are like sports writers and podcasters and in like a way that is like, oh, this is so cool. There's just such like a breadth of voice and perspective and engagement. And
it's become more nuanced.
Zach is like,
right,
so much more nuanced, and in a way that's like you're not just hearing the same arguments rehashed that I felt like I was hearing for the first like 20 years of my life.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, and I've seen the same thing as you, where there's some personalities coming out of that world that feel like they have a lot more depth to me. But on my first thought, I'm like, oh, maybe this is a fallout of the fact of, you know, post Colin Kaepernick, LeBron James sports world is inherently political and nuanced now, and just your blockheaded jock type, you know, may not have enough depth to even go into that stuff. I wonder.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's still like, unfortunately, an appeal to people like, you got to stand for the anthem or else you hate cops and you hate America and you hate Eagles and you hate football or like, you know what I mean? Yeah, like that, that's just like so tiresome to me. But I think some people still will listen to those guys. But like, it's so cool to like Mina, who I also had on my show.
She's great.
It's just like so smart and so funny and like, and it's cool that not everybody is like a 55-year-old white dude who's had a newspaper column for 30 years.
Yeah, right.
And it's just like, okay, trotting out like why you should run out the ground ball even if you know you're going to be out. And it's like, ugh.
Did you hear about some of those fun little rules they're putting in the minors this year?
No.
We got in AA, they're trying where you're allowed to shift but an infielder is not allowed to touch the outfield grass.
Oh, interesting.
You know, to allow the middle of the field so not everyone's trying to hit home runs again. There's another one in single A where they increase the size of the base by a small margin, assuming that that's going to help with stolen bases.
Interesting. I'm into that.
The 15-second pitch clock that some of them are doing, which I'm all for. Yep. I like this stuff. Do you like this stuff?
Me too. I like tweaking little things to make it a more enjoyable experience. I'm not a super tradition based person, especially like when it makes the game more fun and more exciting. Like I was joking. My friend Hannah Kaiser writes about baseball for Yahoo, and she has a show called The Bandwagon. And I pitched to her. She was working on this series about like one big rule to like having people come on. She was going to have me come on and pitch just like what I would do to fix baseball. And mine was you can accrue as many outs until you're like in a live play, you can keep accruing outs that cross over to the next inning. So like if you strike someone out and someone's trying to steal second, you can get a fourth out on a strike them out, throw them out. And that carries over to the next inning.
I like
that. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like just, you know, like long division just carries over.
You got to adapt. Where would the NBA be without the 3-point shot? You know, you got
to
do this.
I know.
Things.
Well, then there's people that like I talked to my dad who's like, I don't like how many 3-pointers they take. He finds that like aesthetically displeasing, which I do get when you see every team, and especially on a night where a team is shooting 50 threes and hitting 15.
Right.
It's just like, it can get pretty ugly.
I agree. I think basketball, there's something coming in the next year or two to
bigger court, make a bigger court. The guys are bigger.
You know,
look how much bigger they are than they were, you know, 50 years ago.
But what could happen with a bigger court is what these newer players are showing you. They have unlimited range. And part of the reason scoring is so insane is because guys like Steph Curry and Damian Lillard can regularly hit at a high volume and a high clip.
40 feet.
So this stretches the defense where no one can defend anyone anymore. So if you make it even bigger,
it might
even make it worse.
So not to get too wonky about it, but I like watching I don't love all the Celtics players' shot selection. I feel like contested two-pointers are tough, but I do think there's going to be I think my hope is that we get a little swing towards like mid-range, like 12 to 15 foot, finding those seams in a defense and like pulling up from there, because it's a slightly lower percentage shot. But when you're shooting it well, I forget who said it. I don't know if it was Steve Kerr was like, we don't avoid those shots. Like the Houston Rockets of a couple of years ago, where they'd be like
none
everything at the rim or beyond three. Because if the defense knows you're going to take a 15 footer, sometimes they have to defend the whole court in a way they don't have to if they don't think you're going to shoot from there.
Sure.
And I heard that on in an interview and was like, oh, that's so smart.
Yeah.
Like, of course you're like making the defense work harder when you're like, oh, these players will pull up from anywhere.
Like Marcus Smart should be going to the rim. He shouldn't be trying to pull up over 6'8" guys seven times a game as he does. Yeah.
No. Agreed. I love Marcus Smart. I'm so glad he's healthy.
Everybody wants a Marcus Smart. Everybody. We got one.
I have a Marcus Smart.
We got a Bruce Brown. We have one now. I'm so happy.
I know. Very exciting. Very exciting.
He's my new man
crush. I have a Smart jersey hanging up behind my desk at the Jesus and Mero office.
Nice.
And there's a piece. I have it as my computer desktop most of the time, but there is a piece that we did where Jesus and Mero went back to the office to like look at how everything had changed in the pandemic.
Oh, yeah,
and Mero went to set the jersey on fire.
Well, that one's just unfair. I mean, at least Yankees, Red Sox, those guys can get back.
Yeah,
you can
Celtics,
talk about
Knicks
27 rings. You can actually have a healthy conversation. Knicks versus Celtics. You know,
it's not a contest historically.
No, it's not.
They had a few years in the 90s, but even then they didn't get any titles.
Yeah, and even then they were like the weirdest team who just like beat people up and like weren't even.
Yep.
They were good, but yeah. So I want to find out what are you at home? What kind of music you listening to right now? Any podcasts or books that you quite like that you want to recommend?
Okay, let me do some recommending. I have been, lately, okay, lately with music, mm-hmm. there have been a few things that I've been really into. At the end of last year, I discovered this rapper from Detroit. Came upon the, right. the back catalog of this rapper from Detroit named Boldy James, who put out 4 records wow. last year, which is like just wow. like wild output during right. the pandemic. Yeah. And my two favorites are Manger on McNichol. I'm like pulling out my phone to make sure I don't get it wrong. There's one called Big Bad Boldy, and then there's one called Manger on McNichol.
Okay.
And those are really great. Benny the Butcher also, like in terms of rap. And then I've been going back to listen to a lot of old MF Doom since his passing as well.
Great.
Then recent music, like new stuff. Julian Baker's new album, Little Oblivions, is awesome. Mm-hmm. It's just like, I am not, like, not every singer-songwriter album grabs, like, even really beautiful, well-beloved ones. I feel like sometimes I like a fuller sound, mm. even in that genre. Sure. And this just, like, it sounds really, like, big, even when it's spare. I don't know. Maybe I'm saying that wrong. But, like, that's how it feels to me. And then the new Hold Steady album, Open Door Policy.
Nice.
I got put on to Beach Bunny.
Okay.
And I've been listening to some of them. Their EP from last year. No, album from last year called Honeymoon. And then that's like a lot of the recent stuff.
Cool.
It's been a lot of that. And then I've been like going back through to like kind of fill in. Like my friends were teasing me because I'm a big Hold Steady fan, but had never really like gone deep with Lifter Puller. So I've been like going through their back.
It was so cool that they were giving you shit about Lifter Puller. I'd like to have a word with them. Come on, take it easy. But whoever you are, take it easy.
Thank you. The Benny the Butcher record and Jeff Rosenstock's record last year yeah. were two of my favorites.
Jeff's is great.
As well as Waxahachie's record yeah, last year.
That record's
those
cool.
2020.
Friend of the program, Jeff yeah. Rosenstock.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Friend of the program, excuse me. I didn't use his proper title. That's like, I just threw a lot of stuff up, but that's like the music that I've really been listening to. Podcast stuff, always Zach Lowe, yeah. especially when the NBA is in season. Haley O'Shaughnessy and Jordan Ligon just started a new podcast called Spinsters.
Oh, cool.
That is, it's like a really cool new basketball podcast that I'm like really psyched about.
Check that out.
Yeah, it's great. Big Doughboys fan. I don't know if you've ever listened to them. They review chain restaurants.
Okay.
That's really fun. That's what?
Cool.
Let me see what else. I'm sure I'm missing something like super obvious that I listen to. My wife Maris has a podcast called The Maris Review where she reviews authors. That's great. She's so, so good at that. Like just like incredible at that.
Yeah. I heard that you were reading. I saw somewhere in an interview that you were reading the books that your wife likes to read to try to like,
oh
get
yeah,
to
yeah,
know
yeah.
her, you know, inspiration I've, better. I'm like,
she,
wow. She
gives incredible recommendations yeah. to like, I would say some of my favorite books of all time were things that I recommended that she was just like, oh, try this. And I was like, holy shit. How did you know that?
Right.
Like, it just cool. like, it felt like there was like a divot in my brain that book like patched over.
Nice.
The Sellout by Paul Beatty was one that she recommended and I loved. And, The Sisters Brothers by Patrick Duet. Hmm. Which rules, like both like really funny and like kind of biting and just terrific.
Cool.
And lately I've read, my friend, Kelsey McKinney has a book coming out in the summer called God Spare the Girls. And it's like a really beautiful, sad novel about like a controversy in like a Texas megachurch.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Really lovely. Really sweet. And then, by the time this is out, my friend Jen Spira, who used to write for Colbert, has this like really dark, really funny short story collection called Big Time. That's like, that will be out, tomorrow as of the recording. And it's like, oh. I was reading it and it just like, it like kind of rattled my bones in this way. Uh-huh. I'm like, this is so funny and it makes me so sad and I think I'm going to be sick. I'm like, it's just like, uh-huh. I was like, man, that is such a like very George Saunders-y. If anybody is like, if people listening are like looking for a frame of reference.
Sounds
yeah.
effective.
So that's like what I would like super recommend it. It's like very weird,
cool.
very funny. Yeah.
Well, the
sorry to just like spit out.
No,
a million
no,
things.
That's why I asked you. I'm definitely gonna check out any rapper with manger in the title of the album because
yeah,
that just sounds
oh, man,
interesting.
That album
right
is like it's so dark and like I would start with. I keep like looking at my phone because I don't want to. No, I like always I say it. Things like slightly wrong.
It's the modern age. It's why we don't know any phone numbers anymore.
Yes, exactly. Detroit River Rock is the song, and it's just like it almost feels like a song suite. It just is. It like rules. It's
awesome.
It's so bleak and like I don't know. It's just awesome. I was like when I found one of the albums just like looking on iTunes for like what's new rap music like an old person does, and then I like went I was like this guy put out you know went and then started looking at reviews and I was like oh cool and they said this one is the masterpiece and I was like all right, and it just is like. I don't know. I was like, where has this guy been? You know what I mean? Like, why haven't I known about
this? That's
how
this? I find
Which
comics.
Which is such a... Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I listen to an album I like, and I'm like, all right, what's Apple telling me that I'll think is funny?
Totally. Oh, man. I'm trying to think of who, what comics... Because it's been, like, I think a lightish year for albums and stuff.
Yeah.
I just watched the new Brian Regan special, which was filmed during the pandemic. But outside at Red Rocks.
Oh, okay. What do you think of like Chappelle's body of work he's been doing this year?
Man,
it's tricky, right? What do you think about that?
I don't feel like the authority on the work of Dave Chappelle. You know what I mean? I think he is such an incisive and insightful cultural critic when he's talking about race in America. And I think like in some of his other work, he has like some blind spots that he elects to leave as blind spots. Right. And that to me is a bummer because like when he is on and when he's like observing keenly and writing to like the full extent of his like Dave Chappelle power, he's like the funniest person. And just like that his, you know, the last few years of his work have kind of been shot through with it, like, you know, just like stuff about trans people that's like such a bummer to hear. I'm just like, man, and again, he's like one of the all-time masters of the form, and I don't want to be like I know better, but it just as a fan I'm like bummed out by it. Like it hurts a little bit to hear. And he, I mean, like we ran into him one time at a bar in LA, and it was just like one of the most magical, exciting night, kind of like 5 years ago or something. Uh-huh. And I was like, wow, this is so exciting. And like, so I really have this like incredible longstanding affection for him. So I don't say this as like, I'm some white guy who knows what's best for everybody. Right. It is like, you know, some of the recent stuff is like, some of the stuff he does is so bracing and thoughtful and like uncomfortably funny about race, and I'm just like, oh fuck, I see myself in that in a way I don't like, and he's so good. And then I think some of the other stuff that, you know, about like gender and stuff, I'm just like, man, I like if you either just like let this slide or were as thoughtful about this as you were about some of the other stuff, it would just be like an unblemished catalog of work.
The double down was strange, right? It was like, anybody could accept the fact that you maybe willingly went into something with a, you know, the wrong set of knowledge or, you know, the wrong attitude. And if he came out, like you said, either let it go or, you know,
or was like, oh, you know what? Like, I don't think there's, I think like being a comedian, and this is me talking about me more than like me being prescriptive for Dave Chappelle, but like I think being a comedian, sometimes you say stuff that's like off key in a way you don't realize, and people say it and you go, and to me the thing to do is to be like, I'm sorry, I didn't realize that it was that what I said was something that was like uncaring or hurtful, and that was wrong of me to say, or like I will do better in the future. I'll do things differently in the future. And I think like you know, there are times where I want to like double down on a joke, but it's usually not for those reasons. Normally it's just like, I made fun of Mr. Bean on Twitter and people yelled at me for like 2 days. And I was just like, absolutely, I will not recant just, my joke about Mr. Bean.
What, does Atkinson Files got you?
It was huge Atkinson fans. That was the problem, was that I referred to him as Mr. Bean and like made some dismissive comment about like, oh, you want to hear what Mr. Bean says about this?
Have you
and
never they were like, seen Rat Race?
People were like, actually, Blackadder is one of the greatest histories, greatest sitcoms in the history of British television. And I was like, cool, out of the 8 sitcoms you have, this was one of the best. It's just like really shitting on British comedy fans.
Oh, man. What do you do if the next time you go to England, like Rowan Atkinson is at the show and he's like, what's up, Josh? Kind of gives you a little bit. You get into it with him?
I'll get into it with him. I'll probably apologize, but because I wasn't even anti-Bean. People would be like, oh, you don't, I was like, look, I just don't know. Like, why would you expect that I've seen your favorite show from 35 years right. ago? You know what I mean? It's like, I was just so mad at people. I was like, leave Rowan Atkinson out of this. I truly, like, if what you say is he's great, sure. But like, why do you expect me to know,
right.
like, all of his bits were like, things that my dad grew up quoting. It was like, nobody in my house in 1991 when the show was on was watching sitcoms on PBS.
Yeah. Sorry, we didn't get BBC yet, you know? Mm-hmm. That's so funny.
Man. But it was like that kind of stuff where I feel like it is so, especially as a comic when you're like, no, but what I said was funny. But like, I think sometimes you have to like, it's hard to parse out the real incisive critique that's hard to hear from the stuff that's just like some dummy on Twitter right. being like, actually, The Rock is not 7 feet tall. And you're like, yeah, that's the joke. That's the joke right. And it's so, but yeah, I think like I try to like have a filter, an intake filter, not like an outgoing filter necessarily. I mean, that too, but like an intake filter for like what's critique that's like someone being like, oh, this is something that you might want to know because the thing that you said is hurtful in a way you might not have intended or maybe did, but like I want you to hear the impact of that right. versus like fact checked, good sir.
I think you nailed the Twitter accent. That's it. That is the Twitter accent. Perfect.
The voice of Twitter.
All right, man. Josh, that was awesome. Thank you so much.
This was so much fun. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Josh.
Yowza.
That was great.
Brad, sorry for the... listen, he's a sports fan. I had to get into it.
I know. You know? It's fine. It's okay. It was good.
You know what you don't want to be, Brad? You don't want to be... Mr. IPA no sports guy. Like it's,
I don't
it's a bad look.
I don't, you know? Mind the sports talk. I don't mind it. It just I don't want it to go on for too long.
I mean, you talk a lot of shit for someone who doesn't mind.
It's another show. Don't you have that show?
What show?
Don't you have a sports talk show?
I do. So you want me to save it all for there and keep it out of here?
No. I would never try to restrain you.
Oh, thank you.
But let's prop our Silk City hot sauce sponsor right now because
yes,
it's a good product for one thing.
Guess who just used it this morning on his eggs?
Oh,
this guy.
I did a po' boy yesterday that I used one of the sweeter versions. Like it's one of the fruity versions.
Like the mango or something.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
It's really good. What we're talking about. There's a company called Silk City Hot Sauce who's helping the program going off track. And currently, if you go to silkcityhotsauce.com and use the promo code GOT, you get 15% off and a free bottle of hot sauce and a bunch of stickers and cool stuff like that. We like this company because it is a small company, not owned by the man. They're growing locally owned peppers. Locally grown peppers, all natural ingredients, no funny stuff, no fillers. It's just like good product stuff. I'm actually allowed to bring into my organic household and not get yelled at, you know?
Yeah. And they've all the flavors have really cool artwork that's done by like working comic artists.
Yeah.
So it's artwork. You can put it up on your counter and show it off.
Art meets food, you know? Like
art meets food in a good way.
Yeah, that's the best. This isn't some art school student laying out at their, you know, senior thesis covering themselves in meat, which is usually how art meets food, you know? Yeah. So, did you see that in art school by any chance?
Oh, I saw a lot of stuff. I did see uses of meat in art for sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's always strange uses of meat. Well, speaking of that, too, Josh Gondelman loves roast beef.
Oh, God. Does he ever?
I haven't eaten roast beef in 25 years, but I kind of wanted one of those sandwiches. I got to be honest. Yeah,
you were kind of out of that conversation, weren't you? I was describing a Philly cheesesteak to my son the other day and thinking, it's been a long time since I had one of those. That'd be nice.
Right, swing by here on your way to Philly.
I might have to do it.
It's an ugly, ugly thing. No, but I appreciate, listen, I'm not that kind of vegetarian. I actually just finished a conversation with somebody where I recently have come to grips with the fact that maybe killing deer is okay. And I don't know if I'm the only vegetarian. Because listen, this is what I've been told.
The longer you stay out there in the sticks, the more you're going to feel.
I know. It happened really quick, actually.
And the next time you pull a tick off one of your kids, you're going to be like,
right,
shoot them all.
Well, here's the thing that really, and I'd love to hear people's opinions on this because I'm super fresh into this like fundamental research. But at first, I was super offended by the idea of these deer hunts. You know, it seemed like what's happening? Is just hunting militias going out there and just like murdering deer? Like, what are they doing with it? And then, you know, I read some information about what the deer are doing to the forest. I can understand their impetus. So I go and I'm like, all right, what's like the hippie method to taking care of this? Like, what's the safer, you know, healthier method for deer? And apparently the alternative is shooting them with like a hormone or estrogen that prevents them from having little baby deer for three years.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, I'm vegetarian, but I'm also a human on this earth who believes in the cycles that happen around me. And shooting another animal with something that doesn't let them have babies for 3 years feels maybe a little more unnatural than someone killing it and using it, right?
Yeah.
Like, as far as like the concept of like an earthly circle goes, you know, it seems like it makes a little more sense, maybe. So I would love to hear more opinions because I'm super fresh into this topic. And I would love if there is, I don't know, some more info on it. I'm sure there's plenty. But I get it. The point is, I get it now. And I'm not offended by someone who eats roast beef. I actually can recall really well working at delis and having to open up a new roast beef and all the blood pours out of it.
Yeah.
It's the gnarliest of the deli meats to work with.
Yeah.
So if you're a vegetarian working at a deli and you've handled roast beef, you know what's up. Really interesting stuff. This is gripping.
If you want to catch up with Josh, and you definitely absolutely should if you didn't figure that out from this fucking show.
Yeah.
He's at Josh Gondelman on our socials. His Make My Day podcast is really good. I've been listening to it. I love it. And honestly, if you're not onto the Jesus and Marrow fucking tip yet, then I don't know where you've been, because that's the funniest shit there is right now.
It's really fucking good. It really is. I want to hang out with those guys.
Oh, totally. I mean, that's the whole point. Like, my wife was pointing out the thing about, she's like, I think I know these guys from Max Fish?
Right.
Or one of them used to hang there? And like, I was like, probably, but it's just, they just seem like those guys that you know.
I've seen literally half a dozen Brooklyn bartenders that look like Dizus.
Yeah.
And they're always so cool. Like, they're always so cool to chill and have a beer with.
Check out all of Josh's stuff. I mean, he's got a book out and he's like, you know, there's nothing but content for that guy.
Oh, he's prolific. We got books, podcasts, writing, stand-up, albums. Prolific. Yeah. Prolific guy. And does it all without being pissed off, you know?
Yeah, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It's a refreshing attitude.
It really is. It's really nice to see these days. And anybody known as the nicest man in something you gotta put in some legwork to get a title like that, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm sure he's been fucking nice to a lot of people.
Well, he was nice to us. Thanks,
he was nice to us. Thanks, Josh. Thanks for coming on. Really enjoyed this talk. And I'm sorry if I overstepped my bounds. I really am. Don't worry. It'll come with a mitzvah eventually. That one was for us, not you, Brett.
Keep in touch with us at goingofftrack.com, at goingofftrack on the socials. If you want to support us for real, patreon.com/goingofftrack. Lots of incentives there. Go check it out. I'm not going to dish them all out here, but check it out. And yeah. We'll see y'all next week.
Thanks so much.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.